You're listening to Dig Deep on Northern Community Radio. I'm Heidi Holton, along with Aaron Brown, our liberal commentator, and Chuck Marone. He's our conservative commentator. We continue this conversation, how to solve problems. Is there a white knight out there? And Chuck, you wanted to bring up something Aaron brought up.
Well, I've been thinking a lot about something Aaron said in our last Dig Deep when we were at the college. He brought up the parliamentary system and contrasted that with kind of our winner-take-all system and said, you know, a parliamentary system creates options for more nuance, for different viewpoints to kind of come to the fore, for different coalitions to form on different issues. And it might be time for us to consider that. I made the kind of retort or the comment to that, that what we have done with our centralization of decision-making, taking things that used to be local decisions, now making them state decisions, taking state decisions and making them national decisions, is we've raised the stakes to the point where we have these huge winner-take-all coalitions. And it gets into this like vanquish your foe kind of thing. And I said, I think what we need to do is actually start devolving that decision-making back down. I want to open up the idea that Aaron proposed, because I think it's an interesting one. The idea that, and I'll say it in this way, and then you can please react to it, Aaron. If we are going to do large, complex things like national healthcare, if we're going to do healthcare at the national level, and we're saying like, it's not possible to do that at the states. It's not possible to do that regionally or at any other level. The only level we can do that in this continental wide country is at the federal level. Is that incompatible with a winner-take-all system? Do we have to then have a parliamentary system? Because what we see right now is that in this winner-take-all system, you have one party, the Republican Party, who said, we are against this, 100% against this thing. We oppose it. We will oppose even intelligent tweaks to it to make it actually work kind of better because we just want the whole thing to collapse. And then they get into power under that guise. And they can't, like, they can't repeal. They have, you know, majorities in both places. They can't repeal it. And they can't repeal it not because of the opposition. They can't repeal it because their own people won't vote to repeal it. This seems, from a governance standpoint, to be lunacy to me. And I'm not pro-Obamacare. Like, I would probably vote to repeal it. But I'm saying, like, from a governing standpoint, what we're left with is a system that everybody says is really, really subpar with no mechanism to actually fix it and address it. Does a parliamentary system get us closer to that? And that's what I'd like to ask.
Well, I'm glad you brought up healthcare because it was the first thing that came to mind when you started talking about this. So let's look at some countries that have a parliamentary system. Great Britain, for instance, the Scandinavian countries, which are known for their national healthcare.
Maybe you should describe what a parliamentary system would function like, too.
So the difference is a parliamentary system, the head of state is elected really in either a coalition of members of your House of Congress. They call it a parliament in Great Britain. But let's say Congress was parliamentary. You'd elect members of Congress, and from among those members of Congress, there'd be multiple parties. You might see a far-right party that was Christian conservatives, fundamentalists. You might see a libertarian, business-oriented conservative party. You might see a kind of a moderate, socially liberal moderate party. You might see a labor party. You might see an environmental green party. And all of these parties would actually win elections somewhere, wherever they're most popular, and they would send their representatives to Congress. And those party leaders and the parties themselves would negotiate to get somebody to 50%. And so someone would emerge as the coalition leader in these negotiations. After the election, you're having these talks. And so perhaps one of the moderate, that center-left party, socially liberal, fiscally moderate, had the most votes, but they needed labor to come in to get them over 50%. So that would affect their agenda, but then the party leader from that party would get to be president or whatever the title is. That's how it runs in a lot of European countries. So Chuck was talking about Obamacare as our example in America, something that people at least would recognize. So Democrats win the election in 2008. They want healthcare. They want some sort of fix to our privately delivered behemoth of a healthcare system that was leaving people uninsured and creating huge costs for people. And so the result was really mostly a behind-the-scenes negotiation among not just members of Congress and the president, but lobbyists and industry leaders,
insurance companies,
providers. Everybody's meeting and trying to influence the outcome of the of a vote that we eventually did see a vote and public testimony, but for the most part, it was hashed out very privately. Well, a lot of that hashing out in a parliamentary system by design has to be done publicly. These parties have to run on something to distinguish themselves. Otherwise, why would you vote for party blue when you could have party green? It's all just arbitrary. So you need to run, and if your issue is national health care, for instance, you'd go to the party that gave you the best answer. If you're a social conservative and social conservative issues are your biggest issue, you'd go to that socially conservative party. So everybody's got their place. And then you have to hash it out afterward. Well, hey, if the center-right party wants to get in power, maybe they got to deal with the social conservatives and give them something they want on policy. And so it's all, but it has to be negotiated in the public eye. And so what I notice about those parliamentary systems, let's just use Great Britain, they've had a conservative government now for getting to be 8-9 years.
It's been a while, yeah.
Yeah. So after a period where Labour had been in power for some time, the Liberal Party in the United Kingdom. So we've had this conservative government, and while there have been some changes to their National Health Service, their nationalized health care, the system exists and will exist, and in fact the Conservatives wouldn't be in power if they were proposing repealing the National Health Service. But what you get, though, is the Conservatives can run on, we can change the National Health Service. We can run on improving something, making it something more efficient, reducing cost. You can run on those things because you're really just running on how to make things better. How do you run on, I'm going to fix Obamacare in our current American political climate? Republicans can only really run on, I would repeal Obamacare, because that is kind of where their base is. That's what people want them to say. You lose a Republican primary if you say, I'm not going to repeal Obamacare, I'm just going to make it better. Even if that's where people are, I think most Americans would say, and in fact, polls show Americans support Obamacare, and also Americans would like it to be better. So who gets to run on fixing Obamacare? Well, typically Democrats get pushed into, don't mess around, don't deal with Republicans on Obamacare, otherwise they'll just repeal it. So Democrats get pushed to defending a system that could be improved, and Republicans get pushed to eliminate a system that people do want in some form. Well, what do we do? We got a mess is what we get.
We get a bad system.
We get a bad system.
Nobody willing to fix anything.
Yeah, and you can argue about how bad it is, but the reality is I think most people would say, well, we could fix this.
Let's say we get a vastly subpar system.
Yeah, it's not as good as it could be, and it's not as good as what other countries get. Now, we've talked before, you can't pull it all back and get to go to an NHS-type system right off the bat in America. But one of the things parliamentary systems have produced, however, is some broad ideas like, you know what, healthcare is important. Everyone should have it in some form. And, you know, look at Germany's another parliamentary system. Their system is more like what Obamacare could be in Germany. But the same deal, they have a parliamentary system that allows parties to refine. You know, it doesn't have to be a government-run program like it is in Great Britain. It can be a privately delivered system like we have in America, but you can't fix it if you're only allowed one of two positions on a very complicated issue.
That's Aaron Brown. He's our liberal commentator for Dig Deep, and Chuck Marone is our conservative commentator. They're talking about big changes in our government, how a parliamentary system could be different. Chuck's going to pose more questions.
Let me throw out another couple, just friendly, fun issues that we can react to. Abortion on the left, and you could say on the right too, but I was going to pick gun control on the right. Mm-hmm. I'll go with the gun control one because I'll pick on my team in this narrative. When you look at gun control, there's pretty, I say, overwhelming public support for some levels of change to gun control law. I've seen polls of 70-80% for limiting assault weapons, for example. I'm not sympathetic to that. Like, it's not a big deal to me. If I went to the polls and there was one party whose like only issue was gun control, that would not motivate me to vote for them in any way. I don't care about it. I really don't care about the issue all that much. But there are people within the Republican Party who this is like their mm-hmm. issue. This is like their one thing that they care about. And because of that, the party embodies a very rigid, hardline, no nuanced position on that particular issue, because this essentially like minority voice within the party is so focused on it. I brought up abortion because I think like the Democratic Party has the same issue with abortion. There's a lot of people who would like certain checks and limitations, and but there's a group within the Democratic Party who says, you know, absolutely zero, no limitation at all. And that dominates the agenda and the conversation. If we had a parliamentary system, what would we see? If gun control was like a huge issue, we would see parties that were generally sympathetic to the gun control issue. And then you'd have one small minority party who was absolutely fanatical about being opposed to it. Is that, I mean, mm-hmm. I'm putting that out there. Is that what we would likely see?
Well, we would see that. But one of the things that I thought of when I was listening to you was, what do we do with radical new ideas? Like radical. So, for instance, in Europe, one of the things you see right now is the rise of more radical right-wing parties whose main issue is immigration.
Right.
They don't want as many immigrants coming into their countries from war-torn countries and other places, right? So these parties are not in power. They've gotten bigger and bigger, and so they've grown. And at some point, there may be a tipping point where you got to deal with them to get a coalition.
This is the other side of it. See, I wanted to get to this. I'm glad mm-hmm. you brought up the immigration thing, mm-hmm. because as we've been talking, I think a lot of people are listening who are on the left side of the political spectrum, maybe even on the right side of the political spectrum, saying, I like this Chuck Marrone guy. I like this flexibility. Maybe a parliamentary system will make a lot of sense. We could have compromise on these issues that are intransigent. And then, yeah, you also have a more flexible, free-flowing, responsive to the masses kind of system. And when 80% of the population says, we don't want immigrants, you're going to get, we don't want immigrants. And I think what we have to respect about our current system is that it functions really well at not functioning. Like it really is a check on the masses and on popular will and on just like flaming out. That's what our system is designed to do. It's not designed to make huge existential national decisions on local nuanced things. Am I doing a fair analysis of the American system?
I think you are. The comparison I was trying to make is we got, however it happened, we got the radical position on immigration in the last presidential election.
Right.
We got it. You know, whether that's what everybody wanted, that's what we got.
Right.
And you can argue what's really changing, maybe not that much. And
That would be my argument, is that we got that position in the Oval Office.
Yeah.
We got that position in part of Congress. Where's the legislation?
Yeah.
And where's the action?
Right.
Like nothing's really changed. The tenor's changed. I will give you that.
Yeah.
But what policy-wise has really changed?
In the parliamentary system, though, you see the rise of these radical parties, UKIP in Great Britain, and I don't know the names of all of them, but certainly
Germany has them.
Scandinavian countries all have them. They all have some nationalistic kind of name. They're a nationalist movement. And they aren't in power, but their rise makes all the other parties think, like, where are we on this? It forces on the left some of the pro-immigrant parties to say, well, we got to band together because this is obvious, this rise, this threat. And then the center parties and the center-right parties have to look at it and say, we're losing our voters directly to this movement. We might need to incorporate some changes in our agenda. I would say, arguably, it's handled a little near, and it actually creates some changes in policy that people might want, or that might better reflect. The flip side of that is, if a movement does take hold quickly, if there's an overwhelming movement, your whole system can come down pretty quick.
Pretty quick.
We've seen that in European history. I mean, you know, European history shows you what happens when a National Socialist Party, for instance, in Germany, rises up quickly and decides to use their new power to suppress the other parties. That gets out of hand quick. Of course, it would probably happen quick in our country too if it ever rose.
Our system is designed to check power, and by check power, that sounds really good, like in a history lesson. Like, of course, that's what we want. We don't want tyrants, but it also means like stifle change, and
the whole point of the Senate is to stifle change.
The whole point. I mean, people get upset like with the Philip. That is the point of the Senate, is to be the check on the masses. So I still feel like we're left with this issue of, do we reform government to be more tactical, more free-flowing, more open, more parliamentary kind of, or do we reform government to essentially say, this is the system we have. It's a check on power. If we want things to change, we have to actually devolve it down to a lower level where we can have 50 different policies on healthcare, not one. I am actually saying to you, Aaron, like, I'm open to that conversation. Like, I don't have a firm hat in one ring or the other. I'm willing to, like, discuss that. I don't think what is possible is for us to do large centralized things with a winner-take-all system. Democracy in our system is supposed to be about electing people who represent a viewpoint, and then they go and they work things out. And what it's become is a system where we try to get enough of a coalition to vanquish the other side. And it just doesn't, like, it can't work that way. It really, for the issues that we're dealing with today, it might have been able to work when you were dealing with a whiskey rebellion and a tariff. But if we're going to do national health care, if we're going to have a national policy on health care, I don't see how you do that with this system in the way we set it up.
Well, even on the state level, just a quick example. Here in Minnesota, starting in 2002, Governor Tim Pawlenty served two terms. At the end of those two terms, I think if you ask Governor Pawlenty, how'd you do? He said, well, he would have said, well, I fixed it.
Yeah.
You know,
I think he will say that.
Yeah. And then we get two terms with Governor Mark Dayton.
Right.
Democrat, opposed to Pawlenty's policies. And he's going out of office this winter, this up next winter. And he's already saying it.
I heard him say, how can Governor Pawlenty even run for governor? He was a disaster.
But he says, I fixed it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Now, Governor Pawlenty is running again. I'm not saying he's going to win, but he could win.
Right.
And so if he comes in, he's going to say, you know what I'm going to do?
I'm going to fix it.
But the problem is, it's totally different. You know, there's no cohesiveness to the policy.
Right.
It's lurching back and forth. And then their appointees kind of linger in the bushes, still trying to hold on to their former boss's policies. And so the winner-take-all thing in Minnesota, I think, shows kind of a sporadic, volatile policy where we can't even agree on healthcare or anything else. We can't just agree that it's good that we do something. I'm a community college instructor. Like, higher education policy is a really good example of, boy, Pawlenty really changed things. I didn't like the changes. I liked what Dayton did better. But our colleges are vulnerable for different reasons too, demographic and technology reasons, different things. And we can't address those problems because we're worried about the political problems of lurching back the other way. And so that makes it really tough. I don't have a quick solution for it, but I think that's the problem, that when we are frustrated with our government in the United States, I think that's why.
I don't know if historically people have voted more against the ideas of the other party than for the ideas of your own. I don't know if that's a historical reality or not, but that has been a reality for my life. I have to say, for every election that I've been in, increasingly more and more, I have found myself voting against the person who I thought would have the worst policies, and then, you know, accepting the other candidate as a counter. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like that is a healthy system. I really don't. I have very rarely been able to vote for someone who I thought actually represented what I wanted to see done.
I can think of a few examples, but I'm very much the same way. And in fact, if you had asked me a few weeks ago, do you care about the governor's race? And I would say, oh, it's a very important race. But, you know, honestly, in my deep inner soul, I would have said, you know what, whatever.
Right.
But now that Pawlenty's running, and I remember what our budget was like under Pawlenty
at
my workplace, I care a ton.
Yeah.
You know, but that's just me having that reaction of, like, I don't want this person I don't like, and I, particularly his policies. Right. And so I'm going to vote. And honestly, it makes you like, I don't even care who my side nominates.
Well, Pawlenty wins the nomination. We get to interview him, right?
We do, yeah. And so in our next segment of Dig Deep, you guys are going to tell us how to make it all right.
We're going to do the podcast only segment.
We'll do a podcast only segment. So check it out at our website, kexe.org. Also, send us comments on Dig Deep or ideas you'd like Chuck and Aaron to tackle. You can send us an email, comments@kexe.org. What up, na, 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 na.